Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNRadio.com/Behind the Badge.
Again, it's 11 minutes after 5. Did I fall asleep watching the Democratic debate last night, or was that a gang of bullies outside my house engaged in a street fight? I'm not sure. I decided to watch last night. I haven't been watching lately when the Democrats get together, but I wanted to see how it went with Michael Bloomberg, and it was entertaining, I'll say that.
It was a good street fight, though. I mean, they came out punching on him, didn't they?
I'll tell you, Steve, did you see most of it? You probably went to sleep early, right?
I did. I watched it up until about 9:30, and then I had to go to bed. But I watched the first hour and a half of it, and wow, they all came out, and they just started pounding on him.
Really? I know. I know that Donald Trump has been calling him Minnie. But after last night, he may be even shorter.
Wow.
I think a little later we'll play that clip. I think the biggest punch was early on from Elizabeth Warren, wasn't it?
Yeah, she came out.
Did it get worse later?
It was pretty bad through that first hour. I mean, they were all on him about all kinds of things. And Elizabeth Warren, she was on him about a couple of things. One was all of the allegations of sexual harassment in his company and whether or not there were going to be non-disclosure agreements that would be released. And then they were on him about his taxes and all kinds of things. It was entertaining, but it was hard to watch in a couple of cases. I mean, there's just so much, I guess, your money can buy in terms of advertising, because until now, most of us have only seen him through his commercials.
Yeah, you knew this was going to happen. Do you want to hear from Elizabeth Warren? Joe, do we have that one handy? This was very early on, and I saw this, and I thought, wow, is this what it's going to be like? But actually, it didn't really get worse than this. Here you go.
Against a billionaire who calls women fat broads and horse-faced lesbians. And no, I'm not talking about Donald Trump. I'm talking about Mayor Bloomberg. Democrats are not going to win if we have a nominee who has a history of hiding his tax returns, of harassing women, and of supporting racist policies like redlining and stop and frisk. Look, I'll support whoever the Democratic nominee is, but understand this: Democrats take a huge risk if we just substitute one arrogant billionaire for another. This country has worked for the rich for a long time and left everyone else in the dirt.
Why would anyone want to get into any kind of political race? I mean, it's unbelievable. Now let's find out what Courtney Guzman is covering for WGN-TV News. Good morning, Courtney.
Hey, Bob. Good morning. Well, I don't know if you saw the Democratic debates last night, but it's what everyone is talking about this morning, because all eyes were on Michael Bloomberg. It was the first time he took the debate stage in this race, the first time he actually qualified to be there. This after the other candidates, well, this was their ninth presidential debate. And a lot of heat was on Bloomberg. He was attacked for his wealth, for all the money he's spending on ads. We're talking about an estimated $400 million at this point. And of course, Michael Bloomberg has been taking a lot of heat for the stop and frisk policies, which were enacted in New York City during his time as mayor. Those policies considered highly controversial and racist. So there were many, we heard from Elizabeth Warren, Amy Klobuchar, Biden, everyone went after Bloomberg last night. And quite frankly, he seemed to be a little bit overwhelmed by the attacks. Even Pete Buttigieg said that this is not the candidate that we need. He's saying that right now we're looking at, actually, when you talk about the latest PBS and NPR polls, we now have Bloomberg surging in the polls as a result of all the money he spent on these political ads. So he's up in second place with 19% support. That opposed to Bernie Sanders, who's now in first place with 31% support. So this has just been very interesting. And we will see in future debates if Michael Bloomberg is able to come back and fight off some of these attacks.
I noticed that Mayor Pete had a bit of a mustache going last night. I think he had Richard Nixon's makeup artist. I'm not quite sure. Let's see. Nevada votes Saturday, South Carolina the week after, and then a dozen states host a series of Super Tuesday contests in less than 2 weeks. Illinois' primary March 17th. So on we go into the political season. And do you feel like you're covering a boxing match when you're talking about last night's debate?
I felt like Bloomberg was up against the wire. I mean, you know, he was definitely on the ropes. They had him on the ropes, and it was one after the other, Klobuchar, everyone came out, and, you know, he was attacked for his wealth. And when you consider the Democratic Party and what it stands for, what it stood for in the past, many people are saying that he is very out of touch. And we, you know, had a line from Pete Buttigieg where he says, why not nominate a Democratic candidate?
Yeah.
And so, you know, taking jabs at Bloomberg, you know, for his policies and the things that he believes more in line with the Republican Party is what he was trying to say. And then Bernie Sanders, you know, he was accusing Bernie Sanders of trying to burn down the Democratic Party and totally eradicate everything and start all over, start from scratch.
Yes, and the fighting has just begun. Thank you, Courtney.
All right, thanks, Bob. Have a great Thursday.
You too. Appreciate the report, as always. 522. And April from Aurora, you are the first caller of the day.
Yay.
You're not counting Courtney Guzman. She's an employee of the company, so I can't give her a prize, but I can give you something. How would you like a $50 gift certificate from Builder Supply Outlet?
Oh, that sounds wonderful. Thank you, Bob.
You know there's so much more than kitchen cabinets. Check out The Edge, their state-of-the-art kitchen and bath showroom in Broadview. And why are you up this early, April?
Well, I'm a truck driver, and I'm collecting the garbage for the good folks that live here in Aurora, Illinois.
Yeah, good for you. What time do you start?
4 o'clock.
Oh, so you're on the job already?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And how is the trash in that area lately? Are people separating their recyclables properly?
I don't know about properly. We do have recycled cans and also garbage cans. And my job is to pick up the garbage. There's a different truck that picks up the recycles, so I can't really say for that. But I will tell you this, Bob. It's very cold out here this morning.
Yes, I know. It is. It's it's wind chilly out. You know, it's been I've talked about this before. I enjoy chatting with the garbage men, the G-men, they like to give themselves different names. Do you like to call yourself something else, by the way, besides a garbage person?
Yes. Well, that would be like I don't know. I really no. The answer is no.
Okay.
I just call myself a garbage person, but really, I'm a truck driver. Is what it is.
Right. Exactly. It's been my experience that people kind of run and hide when the garbage folks come by. But I always enjoy talking to them, and they're the ones who really know what's going on in the neighborhood. You know everything, don't you?
I do.
Mm-hmm.
I know the folks that get up early. That's for sure.
Yes, you do, and more. All right, April. Well, I appreciate you listening, and congratulations on the prize. Thank you so much. Hang on, and we'll get all the information we need to get that out to you.
Thank you, Bob. You take care.
All right. You too. Have a good day. It's 5:25 right now. Welcome back, Dave Ennett, on the sports desk. And when is Northwestern going to win a basketball game, by the way? Boy. Do we know?
It's been tough. They hung in there and had a chance the other night at Maryland. Would have been a huge win for them. But be in action Sunday against Minnesota, which lost at home last night. So maybe Sunday. We'll see.
Hope springs eternal.
Yes.
At least Illinois came up with a win the other night.
Yeah, that was a big win for them at Penn State. Very tough place to win against a top 10 team. So a huge win for them. You know, it's the league is very tough, and but you saw some teams this year that made huge jumps from last year to this year, Illinois among them, Rutgers, Penn State, and so that's kind of what Northwestern is using as their blueprint. They hope they make that kind of jump next season.
Let's see, this is the 20th of February, so March Madness is coming, isn't it?
It is. You basically got, I don't know, another five games or so in regular season games, and then for some conferences, the tournaments start a week from, not this weekend, but the following weekend, and then or 2 weeks, I guess, and then the Big Ten has its tournament in Indianapolis. The weekend of the, it's like the 13th, 14th, 15th that week. And then that's when the NCAA tournament field will be set on that Sunday. And then we get going. So in about 3 weeks.
It's here. Yeah. I turned off the Blackhawks game last night.
Good choice.
They were down.
To say it, but boy, that was.
They were down 1-0 when I turned it off.
Oh, well, that was a little early.
It got better, then it got worse.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. It got rough in the third period. They ran into some very bumpy air early in the third, and the Rangers scored a couple of goals. Hawks came back with a goal, and then the Rangers scored two more and put the game away. And that's a bad loss for them. Playing at home, they're a desperate team, but didn't look like a desperate team last night. And so now it's going to take a hot streak, a real hot streak, and a lot of help to get to the playoffs.
They're what, 8 points out of the wild card?
8 points out, 22 games left. Mm. So you do the math, and it's not. I mean, they're virtually in a situation where, you know, if they were to reel off five or six in a row, you'd say okay, now maybe they're back in it. The problem is they haven't shown on a consistent basis the ability to reel off five or six in a row, and that's the problem.
And I want to talk to you later about David Ross saying that Chris Bryant is going to be the leadoff man.
How about that?
I mean, it's a new way of thinking about that position. I don't know that I go along with that, but let's face it, you don't lead off every inning if you're in that position. I think that's one of Ross's points.
Well, that's a very valid point, and it's been an area where the Cubs have really, they've gone through, I think I saw a number, something like they've had 17, I think they had 17 leadoff guys the last 2 years or something.
And yeah, they had to fix that.
Of course, Rizzo's had success at times.
And yeah.
They've tried everybody. Why not?
Well, he'll get more at-bats in that
spot.
Well,
and then they're talking about maybe Rizzo batting second, so you've got your new daily double.
That's right.
Dernier and Rhino.
That's right. And pray for rain. Oh, no, that's
a different one.
That's an old one. Okay. And then it seems like every sport wants to get into a place where everybody qualifies for the playoffs, because now the NFL is talking about maybe doing that, too.
Well, I think it looks like it's more than a maybe at this point. I mean, it appears they're headed down that road, and it's looked that way for a while, that they would go to one more regular season game, 17 games, and also expand the playoff field. Quite frankly, Bob, I love the NFL playoffs, and I don't mind if they play a few more games. I think it's – and look, if it happens, the Bears' chances of making the playoffs just got better.
Yeah, well, so we like that.
Why would anybody around here not like that?
And I am in favor of cutting back the preseason.
Yeah, well, absolutely.
They were going to
three games.
Yeah,
I mean – there was a time, if you remember, they played six preseason games, and now, you know, they cut it to four. The Bears played five 2 years ago. I think three would be about right. Play at least a couple, but
yeah, we just wanted to get going. That's why.
Or go to college. Do what college does. There are no preseason games. I mean, just start. First game counts.
Yeah. I mean, and it's ridiculous. The early preseason games in the NFL, you know, Saul Needleman is the quarterback. Who? Where did he come from?
Yeah.
Orion has our agribusiness brief.
Good morning. As we watched the grain market yesterday, wheat and corn moved a little bit lower. Soybeans, however, were firm, but wheat showed the biggest change in the last 2 days, up 24 cents a bushel day before yesterday. And yesterday, March wheat closed down 1.25 cents. Profit taking set in after the big rally on the day before that was prompted by another cut in the Australian wheat production because of the severe drought. So yesterday, the March wheat contract down a penny and a quarter, March corn down 2.75 cents, but March soybeans ended up 5.25 cents. Hog market yesterday rose to their highest in 3.5 weeks. Traders still anticipating a long-awaited boost to demand for pork from China. That a day after the world's top pork consumer announced it would grant exemptions to tariffs on U.S. imports. So at the end of the trading day yesterday, the May lean hog report up $1.60 a hundredweight, the April live cattle report up 27, and the April feeder cattle report ended the day $1.40 higher. Today is the opening day of the annual Outlook Forum sponsored by USDA. It'll take place in Washington, and today the Secretary of Agriculture will be announcing a new initiative dealing with sustainability, productivity, and innovation. Then Friday, the Secretary will host agricultural leaders from key Western Hemisphere countries, and it'll be a two-day event. The traders are looking for the numbers that they'll be coming up with on proposed planted acreage in the coming crop year. A poll of some of the analysts show these numbers as their expectations for planting next year. 93.6 million acres of corn, 84.6 million acres of soybeans. That's Ag Biz. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
All right, thanks to Orion, as always. It's 541. Our phone number here and our text number is the same if you want to get in touch. 312-981-7200, and you can email us, bobshow@wgnradio.com. Thanks to Linda for the email. Good morning, Bob. I loved the Don McNeil show. However, it's been many years since I heard anyone mention it. I even went to one of the shows. Hearing the name Don McNeil made me so happy. Well, thank you, Linda. We did mention the Breakfast Club, didn't we, yesterday? Text from 708. Hi, Bob. I'm listening to you in Fort Myers Beach, Florida. I took my Echo device on vacation with me. So glad you're back, Janice. Well, we appreciate that, Janice. I wish I could be with you. Believe me, it's going to be wintry here in the temperature department for the next couple of days. So the good news is once we hit the weekend, they're talking about 46 on Saturday, 45 on Sunday. So, you know, I think we're kind of out of the worst of it, aren't we? It's almost March. Yesterday, I noticed this. I guess it was around 5 o'clock yesterday evening. It was bright sunshine. Hadn't really noticed how the days have been getting longer because lately, it's always cloudy around here. So, you know, that was nice to see.
But you do feel better when the sun's out.
Yes, you do.
Yes.
And when is it that we move the clocks?
It's the March 8th. It's Sunday, March 8th. Saturday night, Sunday morning.
That's going to be very, very rough on us, isn't it? Because we move the clocks ahead an hour, right?
Right. We spring forward.
So we'll get an hour less sleep.
Right.
So when we come in here, we start the show at 5, it'll feel like it's 4.
No, not on Monday. Maybe if you get up on Sunday, it would.
Well, no, it's still...
You'll have a day to recover.
No, I go through this all the time with my wife. It takes me about 10 days I drive her crazy because for 10 days after the time change, I walk around the house saying, oh, what's the new time and what's the old time? My body's a finely tuned instrument.
Yes.
You can't mess it mess it up and then expect it to recover that quickly.
Sounds like you're psyching yourself out, though.
Your yeah, I know. Well, I'm neurotic. Don't you guys know that by now? When I'm president, though, every weekend we will move the clocks back 1 hour. So every weekend you'll have an extra hour for the weekend and an extra hour of sleep. We'll do that every weekend. Although astronomers tell me if that happens, after about a month or so, the entire solar system will be messed up. So I'm still working on it. It's not perfected yet. Steve Grzanich now with our weekly Associated Bank Thought Leader Conversation.
We're here with Brett McKittrick, who's an SVP and Senior HR Consultant at Associated Benefits and Risk Consulting, which is part of Associated Bank. Brett, good morning. Welcome back to the Thought Leaders Chair.
Thanks, Steve. Great to be here.
Before we get underway, I want to remind people what it is that you do. Give us a thumbnail of what it is you do.
Sure. Well, I'm an attorney and HR consultant. What that means is I help our clients, employers of all shapes and sizes and all industries, with a lot of HR and risk management issues. So in essence, what we try to do is help remove some of those barriers to entry or some of those barriers preventing companies and even municipalities and public sector entities from doing what they do best, particularly from the employee side of things.
When we have you in, it's always great because we ask you questions from not only an employee's point of view, but an employer's point of view. That way we all get an idea of what these HR issues are and how they affect both sides of the aisle.
Yeah, so nice. You know, there's so much there from a compliance standpoint and marrying that with a cultural and best practice standpoint.
So I want to begin this morning because it's sort of front and center for a lot of people is the coronavirus outbreak. And it's not really impacting the United States that badly yet, but it is elsewhere in the world. What is the employment situation here? So if somebody at work has coronavirus or even is suspected of having it, what does an employer have to do?
Sure. Well, let's back up just a second. You know, OSHA requires employers to provide a safe working environment for all of their employees. And that does extend to, you know, pandemics, right? And highly contagious or infectious diseases. And so something like the coronavirus, the employer first will ask, you know, can we even talk to our employees about it? I think sometimes employers are a little hesitant to talk to their employees about medical situations or issues. And the answer is yes. You know, first of all, you can ask an employee, are you experiencing symptoms in this area? You might know or you may not know if they have been in a place, you know, Asia and in China, with regard to potential exposure. The EEOC, that's the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, actually has a pandemic preparedness guidance kit for employers that walks them through what they can do and say from a legal perspective.
Is it more likely that, say, the CDC will come and tell an employer, oh, by the way, Joe Smith is going to be out because he's quarantined?
Well, it's possible that would happen, but the CDC might not know, right? The CDC is only going to know if a person is tested. So what an employer can do is, first of all, if they know someone has been to China or Southeast Asia, or as we grow in this area, other parts of the world, and they ask the employee if they are experiencing symptoms, the employer can actually mandate that that employee stay home, following DHS and CDC's guidance with regard to that 14-day quarantine.
The conversation is important today because the business community is listening right now, and you may have a company, you may be at a company where you have to travel to China or other places. What is the requirement there for a company? Can they still send you to these places, or can you say, no, I don't want to go?
Well, you can say whatever you want, but your job could be at stake. And right now, there's not really a legal protection saying that your employer cannot send you to a dangerous area. You know, it's no different than sending someone to the Middle East during conflict time. So I think it's organizations, employers using their best judgment in that area.
Because they don't want that employee to come back with coronavirus.
Oh, absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's in their best interest, too. All right. Well, we'll put a peg in that because I think we're going to be talking about coronavirus for a while yet. It's kind of bigger now than SARS was. And I remember how that sort of impacted everybody. I want to move on to something else. Using personality assessments in the workplace, this is probably something that in the onboarding process, people have probably gone through.
Yeah, absolutely. Employers use personality assessments or integrity tests, as they're sometimes called, with regard to new hires or possibly as they're seeking applicants and looking to hire someone. You know, really at the base of what these tests hope to achieve, or what employers hope they achieve, is pointing out traits or characteristics or even temperaments that could predict fit or success rate for a particular employee. So we're talking of things like dependability, accountability, integrity, even propensity to exhibit certain behavioral traits.
Do you know that you're being tested? The personality test is underway, or the questions sort of stealth questions?
Yeah, great question. Well, the employee or the prospective employee probably knows something's going on, but a lot of these questions are in, by the way, as AI is taking over and these tests are more algorithmically based, we're seeing a lot of these tests kind of bleed into more along lines of what could constitute a psychological evaluation. So employees may not really fully understand the ramifications of these tests.
What are the legal ramifications here?
Yeah, well, because of that, we have to look at potential discrimination issues. You know, Title VII of the Civil Rights Act, you know, it's what protects people from being discriminated against for race, you know, religion, ethnicity, et cetera. Age discrimination in Employment Act, that's important as well. The ADA, the American with Disabilities Act, is actually the big one because, as I mentioned, as some of these tests look more like a psychological evaluation, the question is, do they really constitute a medical exam or not? And the ADA prohibits employers from conducting pre-hire medical examinations. Now, they could do so post-offer, but even those could uncover disabilities that then the employer would have to deal with. And when I say deal with, I mean set aside and not use against that individual.
Yeah. Are there best practices here? Are there, from an HR standpoint, something that everybody's starting to follow?
Yeah, I think employers need to understand a couple of things. One, the potential disparate impact, as I just mentioned, from a discrimination standpoint. Also, two, there is something called the Employee Polygraph Protection Act, which is a U.S. Act it's a law that prohibits private employers from, you know, making employees take a lie detector test. Well, a lot of these tests are coming out with, hey, does this employee or this prospective hire have the propensity to lie? It's an integrity test that is really kind of steering, almost like diagnosing an individual as to whether or not they will be truthful or what their veracity level actually is. So while those kind of tests don't necessarily violate that act in and of itself, there are many states that have their own version of that, particularly Massachusetts and Minnesota, that may prohibit employers from using some of those even diagnostic tests.
Yeah, I haven't thought about this, but I've never heard of people being hooked up to a polygraph test when they're at a job interview, but I guess there's nothing to stop an employer from doing that, is there?
Well, there is. The law does stop an employer from hooking someone up to a polygraph test.
Okay.
But to your point, someone could use one of these integrity tests or personality assessments to kind of gauge someone's veracity.
Brett, how can people get a hold of you and have a one-on-one if they want?
Sure. My first name, Brett, dot my last name, MCKITRICK, at AssociatedBank.com.
Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Brett McKittrick is Senior Vice President and Senior HR Consultant at Associated Benefits and Risk Consulting, part of Associated Bank. He's our thought leader today. You can hear more of our thought leader conversations and meet our thought leaders at AssociatedBank.com/thought leadership. And now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Thursday, February the 20th. The numbers come out today for first-time unemployment benefits. We'll get a look at the job market, at least a snapshot of how things are going. The experts are forecasting 215,000 workers filing initial claims last week, 10,000 more than the week before. The numbers coming at 7:30 Chicago time. Also, the Philly Fed Manufacturing Index, leading economic indicators. Fed Speaker Tom Barkin out. German consumer confidence numbers impacting European markets. And on the earnings calendar today, Domino's and Dropbox. Just a few things that could move the markets on this Thursday, February the 20th.
Thank you, Steve. You know, we try to make you feel good here when you get up in the morning because nobody's happiest at that time, except maybe Mrs. Surratt, but that's the exception. And you ought to return the favor, but you don't. I'm just looking at the texts, and we're getting so many like this one. Hi, Bob. Listening in our new home in Punta Gorda, Florida, on our Echo. You all sound great. 85 degrees forecast for today. That doesn't help us. You know, not today anyway. I was thinking maybe we should do a remote today and broadcast live from the front of Blago's house there in Ravenswood Manor, see if all the TV people would show up for us. We've gone, I think, 1 hour now without mentioning Rob Blagojevich until now. Let's see if it continues. Good morning. It is 6:09. Have you ever heard about the organization called Bear Necessities here in Chicago? It was founded more than 27 years ago by Kathleen Casey after she lost her son, Barrett Bear, to pediatric cancer. The organization supports families in Illinois with children who are battling cancer and supports pediatric cancer research. Kathleen Casey joins us now. Good morning, Kathleen. How you doing?
Great. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Talk for a second about whether we're getting anywhere here as far as pediatric cancer. Has the research made a difference in recent years?
That's a great question. Yes and no. They're definitely working on more targeted therapies, but we are seeing more incidences of pediatric cancer. So it still remains the number one cause of death by disease in our children from the ages of 0 to 19. So that's why research is so critically needed. And unfortunately, less than 4% of all federal funding that's available for cancer research goes to our kids. So it's considered a rare disease by our government, and yet there'll be over 15,700 children diagnosed, and at any given time, about 60,000 children in the United States that are currently in treatment. So there have been some great new therapies, but those have all come from private funding, such as an organization like Bear Necessities that funds these, you know, needed research projects. So it really is critical that organizations like ours continue to fund that research.
And that's why your event, Boots and Bling, coming up on Saturday, is so important. And I know a lot of folks would like to attend, and more people would like to contribute, even if they can't attend. Tell us about the event and how people can help.
Sure. It's a great event. Tickets are still available online today. Otherwise, they can call our office, you know, and purchase tickets. The event itself is going to be a lot of fun. We just changed it up a little bit this year and went with the Boots and Bling theme, so people can come in Western attire. They can come in regular black tie attire, whatever they feel comfortable in, but be ready to have fun. There's a mechanical bull involved. There's auctions, and there's raffle for airline tickets, and then there's live auctions with wonderful, wonderful things from a beautiful location in St. Bart's. Steak 48 right here in Chicago is doing a dinner for eight, chef's table. So we have many different things that they can purchase, and that should be going up online pretty soon for people that can't be there. And, of course, just general donations always make a huge, huge difference for us in our mission.
Okay, and if you go to bearnecessities.org, bearnecessities.org, you can find out about the event and about the organization as well. And we're talking about Saturday night over there on South Hoyne, cocktails, fun, and more. And it's the 27th anniversary, Bear Tie Ball Boots and Bling. Do we have that all straight there, mm-hmm. Kathleen?
You've got it, absolutely. So, yeah, and it's bear is the animal, B-E-A-R, so Bear Necessities. But, yes, absolutely, give us a call. Check us out on the website. There are many ways people can get involved all throughout the year. This isn't our only event, but this is one of our largest of events. So we look for any kind of support that we can to help these kids in our mission to just make them, give the kids a chance to be a kid for a day or two.
And we gave the address, 2520 South Point. Is that a hotel?
That's actually the Garrity. It's a location. It's an independent event venue over on Hoyne there. So it's called the Garrity.
Right.
Really great space, a lot of fun. And we're going to have fun, but it's going to make a big impact in these children's lives.
Well, congratulations on the work you're doing. It's been going on since 1992. Kathleen Casey with us this morning. The organization dedicated to eliminating pediatric cancer and providing hope and support to those who are touched by it. Go to bearnecessities.org. That's B-E-A-R, bearnecessities.org. All right, good luck, Kathleen, and thank you very much for talking with us.
Thanks for having me. Take care, Bob.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, good morning, everyone.
Now the top six at six with Bob Saras on WGN Radio.
Here we go at 6:19. First up, the debate last night after eight relatively cordial gatherings of the Democrats last night in Las Vegas. It was a two-hour battle. Every candidate put on the defensive, especially Michael Bloomberg, appearing on that debate stage for the first time. The former New York mayor struggled from the start to address his past support for stop and frisk policing and longtime allegations of disrespectful behavior toward women. Early on, Elizabeth Warren delivered what looked like a knockout punch.
I'd like to talk about who we're running against. A billionaire who calls women fat broads and horse-faced lesbians. And no, I'm not talking about Donald Trump. I'm talking about Mayor Bloomberg. Democrats are not going to win if we have a nominee who has a history of hiding his tax returns, of harassing women, and of supporting racist policies like redlining and stop and frisk. Look, I'll support whoever the Democratic nominee is, but understand this. Democrats take a huge risk if we just substitute one arrogant billionaire for another. This country has worked for the rich for a long time and left everyone else in the dirt. It is time to have a president who will be on the side of working families and be willing to get out there and fight for them. That is why I am in this race, and that is how I will beat Donald Trump.
Wow. Down goes Bloomberg. Down goes Bloomberg. Man. Roger Stone. Oh, sorry. Paul's first here.
Now, page two.
Our next item, Roger Stone, whom a jury found guilty of lying to Congress and threatening a witness regarding his efforts for the president's 2016 campaign, will be sentenced today in Washington. Stone has asked for a sentence of probation, but the Justice Department has advocated he serve prison time. Judge Amy Berman Jackson of the D.C. District Court has authority to sentence Stone as she sees fit.
Page three.
Two elderly cruise ship passengers with coronavirus who were on Princess Cruises Diamond Princess have died. A health ministry official confirmed that they had been previously hospitalized in serious condition and had existing chronic diseases. John Hopkins Center, which has built a map of coronavirus data, including cases, fatalities, and recoveries, also cites two deaths from the Diamond Princess, which brings the total death toll from the virus in Japan to three. 621 cases of the virus had been identified among the 3,711 quarantined passengers and crew, making the ship the site of the most infections outside of China. One Diamond Princess passenger has recovered.
Page four.
Downtown Alderman Brendan Riley introduced an ordinance yesterday at the city council meeting that would outlaw street harassment in Chicago. The measure specifically prohibits people from directing insults, taunts, or offensively coarse language toward anyone else in a public place. I guess that means the Democrats could not stage a debate downtown. Alderman Riley will talk about this and more. He'll be in our studio after the 7:30 news this morning.
Don't it may concern.
Over 10,000 new apartments are predicted for downtown Chicago by 2022. Modest annual rent increases of 2 to 3% are expected to continue, even as developers draw up plans for the new apartments. It's yet to be seen whether those gains will be enough to help landlords overcome new obstacles, including an expected rise in property taxes.
Stand by for news.
And number six, German experts say eating full English breakfasts could lead to weight loss. The new study says those who start the day with a massive meal burn 2.5 times as many calories as those who only have a smaller meal. Can we ask our pal Dr. Most, who joins us here every week, to talk about this? Because I am so confused, because I thought the thinking now was fast. Don't eat as soon as you get up. Don't have that meal right away. That's better for weight loss. So I don't know which study to pay attention to now. Maybe the doctor can clear this up next time we talk to him. Anyway, back to this German study. A bigger breakfast, this study says, boosts the metabolism by triggering a process known as diet-induced thermogenesis, where energy is dissipated as heat after a meal. The findings add to a growing body of research that says the best way to lose weight is to eat your largest meal in the morning and your smallest in the evening. Okay, I think everybody agrees on that, but the discrepancy is some of the experts and some of the studies are saying you should have many, many hours between meals, like, you know, eat dinner early and then don't eat again till as late as possible. So I don't know now, what am I supposed to do? Eat a big breakfast early, not eat a big breakfast but not early? What do I do?
See, if you eat the big breakfast early, you have all day to burn it off.
Well, that seems logical, doesn't
it? Yeah.
By the way, we do have some breaking junk food news that I'll throw in here.
Steve Grzanich, you better wake up.
I'm tuned in. What?
I don't think this is a very good idea. Burger King has a new advertising campaign for the Whopper, and they show the Whopper covered in mold in these ads. The message is Burger King is removing artificial preservatives from its signature burger. Is that a good idea, though, to show the Whopper moldy? By the end of the year, Burger King says all food items will be free from artificial colors, artificial flavors, and artificial preservatives in the U.S. Okay, well, that I guess is a good thing, but really? A moldy Whopper?
I remember seeing something, and I want to say this may have been with another company that was advertising against the Golden Arches McDonald's. They showed a McDonald's cheeseburger time-lapsed over months, and it never changed. So it might be a good thing. This might be a good thing to show us that, hey, this burger really will get kind of sickly looking if you don't eat it right away.
I don't know about that. Let's see. The Shamrock Shake is back. It returned yesterday. McDonald's has served the iconic cult favorite for 50 years now. It was created in 67 by a guy named Hal Rosen, a Connecticut McDonald's owner and operator. The light green drink is made with soft serve ice cream, artificially flavored Shamrock Shake syrup, and whipped topping. Let's not go into the ingredients of the Shamrock Shake syrup. Let's just enjoy our Shamrock Shake, shall we? And Wendy's is going to start serving breakfast March 2nd. Items on Wendy's breakfast menu include the Breakfast Baconator, Frosty Chino, and the Honey Butter Chicken Biscuit. Sound good?
Are you asking? Really?
Don't ask Dave. He won't eat it.
This is not the first time Wendy's has tried out a national breakfast menu. In the mid-80s, the chain's morning menu included omelets, French toast, and toasted sandwiches. But because the items took too long to make, the breakfast menu was discontinued, though there have been small tests across the nation for several years. And they also say here that the eggs, where did I read this? Yes. Now, the eggs for the new breakfast sandwiches at Wendy's will be hand-cracked. So that means that, you know, they're not using the whatever that egg stuff is. It's not a real egg or whatever it is. And the Breakfast Baconator has a fresh cracked egg, signature sausage patty, and six strips of Applewood smoked bacon. Well, there's your huge breakfast to start the day, I guess.
Six, right? Did you say six strips of bacon? Wow.
Now, you know what? You talk to people on the keto diet, and they'll tell you, no, that's good. That's good. You know, just to cut back on, you know, have that without the bread. Don't eat the bread. Cut down on your carbs and sugar, and you're good to go. So, again, I don't know who to believe anymore on what to eat, and I don't know which study to pay attention to, but there's your breaking junk food news, or as I like to call the breaking news, just in, or did you hear this, or this just happened, because all the newscasts, they've ruined the term breaking news because they overuse it. Now it means nothing because every story is breaking news. Every banner is breaking news. Who's going to be the first news director to say, let's not use that anymore, and then they'll stand out? Why, oh, why was I blessed with this talent?
And that's the way it is.
This has been the Top 6 at 6 with Bob Sirach on WGN Radio.
Good day.
And at the end of our broadcast last week, we uncovered the secret world of Chicago's Pedway with Lori Westerman, tour director of the Pedway Tours at the Architecture Center. The cold weather is back, so anyone downtown needs to know a few things, like exactly where is the Pedway and how you get in.
Basically, the Pedway is a passageway in the downtown Chicago area. You can get as far east as the Lakeshore East Development, as far south as Van Buren at the Little Metro Electric Station. You get west as far as City Hall, and it's a great place to be on a day like this, for sure.
It really is, and it's not just an underground walkway or tunnel. There are a lot of shops now, places to eat and drink along the way, aren't there?
There absolutely are. As I like to say, you can eat, drink, be merry, get married, get divorced. You can do it all in the Pedway. Even go for a swim in a pool.
Okay, hang on a second. How do you get married and divorced in the Pedway?
Go through City Hall, go to the marriage court.
And the swimming pool?
Swimming pool is in a health center that's in the lower level of the Heritage condominium building.
And you can get to a couple of train stations, CTA and Metra. Where are those? How do you get there?
Well, the idea of the Pedway in the very beginning was to connect what they called traffic generators. So we're talking buildings, government, residential, commercial buildings. They're also to public transportation. In what we call the main stem of the Pedway, that main long section a lot of people are familiar with that goes by Macy's, is connections to the Blue Line. I heard you earlier say, you know, you can get all the way to London and never have to go outside. That's certainly my goal. Also the Red Line. And then Millennium Station, which not only includes Metro Electric, which a lot of people are familiar with, but also the South Shore Line that goes to Indiana.
I hope that the $4 million in federal funds for Pedway upgrades will include some better signage, because shouldn't there be more signs street level to direct people to the Pedway entrances?
One of the things that was originally studied, came out about a year ago, was just the thing you're talking about, was coming up with some way to be able to say to people, here, this is the way you go if you want to get there. Right now, you kind of got to know about it, but generally, it's just in the basements or the lower levels of some of the downtown buildings, so it's not really hard to find out, but it's also kind of a secret in a lot of ways, and a lot of information wasn't available about it until recently.
And the Pedway has expanded over the years, hasn't it?
Absolutely. It started in the lower level of what today is Block 37, connecting the Blue Line, which was then the Dearborn Street Subway, with the Red Line, which was then the State Street Subway, and that connection was completed in 1951. In the 60s, we got some of those government buildings, the Daly Center, County Building, City Hall, connected. In the 70s, brought us the Illinois Center Pedway and a section of the Pedway in the North Loop that we can't access anymore because one of the buildings has been closed to the public. Then in the 80s, we got the Thompson Center, and then everything kind of came to a halt until the 2000s when the Lakeshore East people started developing their area, and they realized, wow, you know, this is an important asset for the people that are going to live here. So as those buildings have come online, they've pretty much connected them somehow to the Pedway, and it's a very popular feature for people who live there.
What are the hours of the Pedway? When is it open and when does it close?
Well, along with signage, that's one of the great mysteries of life. in order to be part of the Pedway system, you have to be open from 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. on weekdays. Now, that varies a lot. For instance, the government buildings are open from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. Some of the other buildings are open a little earlier, maybe close a little later. Some are open on Saturday, some are not. Almost nothing is open on Sunday. But there's really nobody overseeing all of that with the city. So again, you kind of have to get used to the parts of the Pedway you're going to use, and that's going to help you figure out when you can use the section that's most interesting to you.
I know you give tours of the Pedway. The Chicago Architecture Center has some great tours all around the city. Is there a easy spot to go online to get information about the Pedway and also everything else you're doing at the Architecture Center?
Absolutely. Go on architecture.org, learn all about it. We have two Pedway tours, one of the called the Chicago Pedway that starts at the Thompson Center, ends up at Aqua, and we have another one that starts right here where we are today at the Chicago Architecture Center and the Illinois Center and ends at the Cultural Center. We only have a few left this season. We only go to the first part of March, so get a ticket soon.
It's been my impression whenever I'm down in the Pedway that most of the folks are regulars, and for the bulk of Chicagoans, it's a mystery.
Absolutely. You see a lot of the same faces all the time, even some of the folks who sort of work down there. One is Steve
Stephen, who sells Street Rise right outside Macy's. You see him all the time. Ed, who takes your picture in the marriage court after you get married. So we do see a lot of the same faces all the time.
All right. Well, we'll see you underground, especially today if we're downtown.
Absolutely. It's a perfect Pedway day.
Lori Westerman, tour director of the Pedway Tours at the Chicago Architecture Center. I appreciate you clearing up some of the secrets of Chicago.
Enjoy.
And in just a second here, we'll get some extremely local news from Block Club Chicago's Jen Sabella. And the first item we want to talk about is Six Corners and what's going on there or what's not going on there. We'll get to that and also talk about a new official city holiday that's sort of in the works. Also, the Park District shuts down Humboldt Parks Advisory Council. And Howard Brown buying a pioneering gay bar, Little Jim's, for a major expansion that's going to be in Lakeview. Here's Jen. And first up, Jen, Six Corners. And are the plans definite?
It sounds that way. Good morning. We've been covering this since back in the day at DNA Info. And there's this, they call it a lake at Six Corners, which is Cicero, Milwaukee over there up in Portage Park. And there has been this huge space that's been vacant. And a lot of the businesses over there have shut down. And a lot of business owners are like, we need something here. We need something to bring foot traffic. We need a grocery store or something. So when Alderman John Arena was defeated by Alderman Jim Gardner in the 45th Ward, they were really close to inking a deal for a senior center and an Aldi store at this intersection. And as soon as Gardner took office, he said, no, this isn't going to work. So there's been this battle between people who essentially were Gardner's like supporters versus Arena supporters for, you know, pressuring the alderman to get something up at this corner. And he has finally signed on to the plan. So I know that the developers behind this project, this has been years in the making. So they are relieved. They've owned the lot since 2014. So for 6 years, they've been trying to get something in this location. And it's going to be a senior center with Aldi as originally planned. But Alderman Gardner said he was able to talk the developers into making some changes, including more like independent living units in the senior center, reducing the height of the building, which we cover development a lot, and that is like a number one complaint from neighbors if they feel like the height of something is out of place. Mm-hmm. So it sounds like it's happening. They said they're moving forward at least, so it'll need city council approval. It already received the approval, the earlier version of the project under John Arena. But now Alderman Gardner and the developers say they could start construction in the fall. So I think people are relieved.
Yeah, I would think so. That's such a busy corner there, Milwaukee, Cicero, and Irving Park. I would think that retail folks would really love to be in there. I'm surprised there's more demand from the retail people. You mentioned the senior center and all of that, but that's 45,000 square feet of retail space?
Right. Yeah, they actually tried to get a Target in there. They were really trying to get a big box retailer, and it was unsuccessful. A lot of people came through, and they've been lobbying people for years. It's just a lot of things have shut down in that intersection, and I think people were nervous about taking a chance on it. So what the original planners say, and the developers are like, okay, this is going to be kind of a higher-end senior center, and we're going to bring humans there, whether it's the seniors living there or the family members visiting them. And that foot traffic is going to create more demand for all of the retail, and they're hoping that that attracts these bigger retailers to the neighborhood.
Yeah, it should. Okay, let's move on to the movement to make June 19th a city holiday. Explain this one, Jen.
So June 19th is the day that enslaved Americans were emancipated. So this has been celebrated by the Black community for years. but kind of, you know, not with an official holiday. But there's been demand across the country to make it an official holiday. Last year, Governor, at the time, Rauner, 2018, Governor Rauner declared the day a state holiday, but it doesn't really have any of the things that come along with the holiday, like you're not getting paid time off or anything like that. So Alderman Maria Haddon up in the 49th Ward and Alderman David Moore in the 17th Ward, they want to make it a city holiday, which would essentially allow people to take paid time off to celebrate June 19th. The price tag, and I'm not sure how they calculate this. I think it's like wages, lost wages, or you know, lost productivity on holidays. They're saying it would cost the city $100 million. Alderman Haddon's office was like, honestly, we don't know where that number came from. So they're taking it with a grain of salt. So they're trying to make this a holiday, but they want to make it without costing the city that much money. So they, I think they're trying to urge people, you know, employers to allow their employees to take a floating holiday on that day. So kind of what people use in, you know, for religious holidays, various religious holidays, you know, a paid time off that you can, a day off you can take, you know, if you want to. So it's been introduced. It actually has 41 co-sponsors. So the vast majority of aldermen are on board with this, but it's kind of stuck in committee right now. So we'll see where it goes. There's a group on the West Side called the Black Remembrance Project. They've really been pushing for this, and this is the most success they've had. They are, you know, getting people's attention. So, yeah, they're hoping that some employers take notice and allow this day to be celebrated by their employees.
Well, since I'm in charge of WGN until the managers get in at 9 o'clock, I will use my authority now to declare June 19th a WGN Radio Company holiday effective this year, a fully paid holiday. So that's done.
Excellent.
Now we can move on to the next story about the Park District and Humboldt Park. What happened?
This is a wild story, and I like, when our reporter pitched it, I was like, this sounds like a boring story. Like, oh, a Park District Advisory Council, like, snooze fest. It is not a snooze fest. This group, they're basically supposed to organize Easter egg hunts and park activities in Humboldt Park. And they have been battling to the point where there are physical fights at their meetings. There are threats of lawsuits. A quote was, they like deeply hate each other. Like, this is beyond beyond normal drama, neighbor drama. Mm-hmm. And they had an election at the end of January for a new leader of the advisory council. And it's basically the park district was like, you know what? Y'all are a mess. We are going to suspend this group. So the group has been suspended until they can get their stuff together. So they're basically saying that there's a group of neighbors that are, it's been in the neighborhood for a long time, and then there's a group of like newer people who moved to the neighborhood, and they are battling. They're calling it, you know, the people who've been here all along versus the gentrifiers. And it's just a really unhealthy situation.
Yeah, it sounds
so,
like it.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's just on hold right now. The park district is trying to come in and fix things up. Yeah, we're hoping maybe our story has made people feel in the group like maybe we should all, you know, enter a peace circle and try to figure this out.
Peace and love. And I just have a couple seconds left here, but we should mention Little Jim's and what's happening with that bar.
So Little Jim's is the oldest gay bar in Chicago. It opened in 1975, and they are going to Howard Brown Health Center, which they are responsible for a slew of health services for LGBTQ Chicagoans. They're going to open a clinic in its place. So it's the closure of an iconic Chicago institution, but it is being replaced by something that is really great for the community. And this is part of a larger citywide expansion of Howard Brown, since they said demand for their services has skyrocketed in recent years.
Jen Sabella, and she's given us the extremely local news here every morning, and so are her colleagues from Block Club Chicago. We appreciate it, Jen. Thanks. Have a good day.
Thanks so much, Rob.
How you doing on time? Almost 10 after 7 now. I brought in something from the Bob Surratt record collection this morning. This day is historic in rock history. February 20th, on this day in 1959, Jimi Hendrix played his first gig ever. It was in the Temple de Hirsch Synagogue basement, of all places, in his hometown of Seattle. He played, and then he was fired from that band after the first set due to what was termed wild playing. A little hint of what was to come. Awake now. Did you ever hear Paul McCartney's story about Jimi Hendrix? Paul and Ringo and George were in the audience one night at a club in London. It was a Sunday night, 4th of June 1967. The curtains opened, Jimi Hendrix came on stage, and he started playing Sgt. Pepper, which had only been released on that Thursday. So it was just Sunday after the release, and Hendrix was already playing Sgt. Pepper. Paul called it the ultimate compliment, a shining memory. Paul went on to say, "I admired Hendrix so much. He was so accomplished. To think that that album had meant so much to him as to actually do it by the Sunday night, 3 days after the Sgt. Pepper release. He must have been so into it, because normally it might take a day or more for rehearsal, then you might wonder whether you've got it, but he just opened with it." McCartney went on to say, "It's a pretty major compliment in anyone's book. I put that down as one of the great honors of my career." I'm sure he wouldn't have thought of it as an honor. I'm sure he thought of it the other way around, but to me, that was a great boost. And then there's another great story involving Hendrix and the band Chicago. One night backstage out in L.A. at the Whiskey A Go-Go, Walt Perezater, one of the original members of Chicago, he's in the horn section. This was the late 60s, and Walt felt a tap on his shoulder after he performed at the Whiskey with what was then called the Chicago Transit Authority. And Perezater remembers that it was Jimi Hendrix, and he said, "Your guitar player is better than me." How about that, coming from Jimi Hendrix? He was talking about Terry Kath, the late member of Chicago, who went on to be hailed by many as one of rock's greatest. After that, Jimi Hendrix toured with Chicago, and that helped boost their career. Eventually, of course, their name just became Chicago, and they had 21 top 10 hits after that, but got the big boost from Jimi Hendrix when he invited Terry Kath and the rest of the band to join his tour. Rolling Stone named Jimmy the greatest guitarist of all time. And they're releasing a rare Hendrix track, a cover that was recorded 40 years ago. They're going to come out with that digitally and also on vinyl. It's called Bleeding Heart, which is an Elmore James blues classic. It'll be part of a studio album release called Valleys of Neptune. So, Jimi Hendrix, on this day in 1959, he played his first gig in a Seattle synagogue basement. A little something from the record collection this morning. In the money department today, Dow Jones futures down a little bit early today. Here to talk more about that and why some people are nervous, Bill Geiger of Geiger Wealth Management, Chicago's retirement planning experts. How you doing, Bill?
Good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm great. And some people, though, not feeling so good about the market and especially how the coronavirus is affecting world markets. Everything's global, isn't it?
It is. And you know, something very timely, Goldman Sachs just came out yesterday and warned about a possible correction due to what's going on with the coronavirus, due to how it's affecting earnings. And Bob, you know, we specialize in working with people just getting ready to retire. And this is a very important time in your life to be sure that you don't have too much risk in your portfolio. If there's any stage in your life you have to be concerned about, this is late 50s, early 60s. And people should be keeping an eye on the coronavirus as well as everything else that's going on. You don't want to give up all these gains you've had at this stage of your life.
Now, I'm certainly not an expert, but I keep hearing about how the market hates uncertainty. And this is an election year. On top of the coronavirus, you got a lot of things to be concerned about. So the question is, how do you protect yourself against the market dipping? Because eventually it will, won't it?
Absolutely. It's not a question. It's a question of when. And, Bob, you're right. There is a lot of craziness going on this year, pre-election, the coronavirus, trade deals going on and conflicts. This is a really, really important time, Bob. You want to stay in the market. You want to continue doing well leading up to retirement, but you want to protect what you have. And we work hard on putting a safety net underneath people's portfolios so they can stay in the market, but they can protect themselves from really big losses.
What's the safety net, and what's the best piece of advice you can give us this morning?
Bob, the best piece of advice that I could give folks this morning is to do a retirement audit, on your portfolio and your retirement plans, a retirement audit. Make sure that you're on the right path, that you're doing the right things to prepare for retirement. I mean, think about it. What better time to do this than at the top of the market with your portfolio at record highs? Make sure you don't give back to the market drop just before you retire. Make sure you're growing your portfolio, but protecting yourself from big losses. Be smart. Take care of your family. Take care of your retirement. And take care of your legacy.
Is it easier said than done?
Well, it takes a little bit of work, but that's what we specialize in. And, Bob, I know you're going to talk about this in a moment, but we're going to sit down with five couples on a complimentary basis and help them create a full-blown plan for their retirement. We'll help make sure that they're doing the right things, the things that they should be doing at this stage of life, make sure their portfolio grows well but's protected from losses, that they understand just how much income that they're going to have, they're going to need and have a plan for that and where it's going to come from, that they've done everything they can do to manage their taxes. Bob, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say is it easy to do this? I mean, is this a simple process when they sit down with you?
It is the way we do it. We sit down, we take it a step at a time. We first sit down and meet and want to understand everything about our clients, everything that's going on in their lives, what their goals, what their dreams are, what their concerns are. And then we'll analyze their portfolio. We'll do a complete audit of their portfolio and their plans, and we'll help them put together, on a complimentary basis, a complete plan for their retirement.
I'm going to give the phone number out in a second here so people can take advantage of that. Bill Geiger, Geiger Wealth Management. Have a good day, Bill.
Nice to be here, sir.
Are you confident you're doing everything you can be doing, everything you should be doing to prepare for retirement? Bill and his team can help make sure you're on the right track to retire comfortably. They have this special opportunity for you. They'll sit down with you personally and create that full-blown plan for your retirement. That's up to a $3,000 value. It's complimentary for the first five callers who have at least $500,000 saved for retirement. Here's the number to call, 800-681-2498, 800-681-2498. At this stage of your life, your portfolio is hopefully bigger than it's ever been, and you need to have a plan in place to protect it, to have the income you're going to need, to reduce your taxes, and to be able to sleep at night. Bill and his team are going to translate the complex financial planning process into easy-to-understand steps with a personalized, full-blown retirement plan designed to help you retire safely and comfortably. Call for your complimentary, personalized, full-blown retirement plan, 800-681-2498. That's 800-681-2498. Something good to think about on this cold morning on Saturday. You turn on your radio, you're going to hear the bat hitting the ball hitting the mitt, and the sounds of spring training. First White Sox game, the broadcast is Saturday.
It's the Cactus League opener against the Los Angeles Angels in Glendale, Arizona at 2 o'clock right here on WGN.
And I see where the Cubs' new marquee channel will be up and running on Saturday.
On Saturday for
their
game. First game, yep.
Their programming will include, right off the bat, a documentary on Ernie Banks and contributions from Bill Murray, who was filming some segments out in Arizona last week. Now, this is interesting because the Ernie Banks documentary is, I believe, according to my spies, going to include some up-close and personal conversations recorded with Ernie on video some years ago by this reporter.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
Yeah, we sat down with Ernie for a good hour, hour and a half, and it was pretty interesting because, you know, you never know what you're going to get when you talk to Ernie, right? By the way, I exchanged emails from Ron Rappaport, mm-hmm. who wrote the biography on Ernie that came out a while back. I'm still embarrassed to say I haven't read it yet. I've heard a lot about it. We're going to talk to Ron about it here in the next week or so because that, as I understand it, that book, you know, it was not your normal Let's Play 2, I'm happy all the time Ernie. Yeah. He really revealed all sides of the great Mr. Cub.
Yeah, it was not a, I guess, the abridged version mm-hmm. of Ernie's life. And, but it's really a well-done book. I have read it. And, I mean, there's... You kind of see a different side of Ernie, I think, than most fans probably got to know. And maybe some people don't want to know some of that.
Well, no, I think you want to know about the side of him. I mean, over the years, we would talk a little bit about his conversations with Jackie Robinson and the problems he had coming up.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, you just knew that he couldn't be. Nobody can be all sunny all the time.
Right.
As we saw Ernie most of the time, right?
Right. But that is the image I think most fans have of him.
Yeah. And whenever I ask players who played with him back in the day, they said, that's Ernie. I mean, I don't think they saw the other side of him ever, right?
Right.
And, you know, I don't know if Ron wrote it in the book. One of the funniest stories was Ernie claims that when he was playing first base and the visiting team would get on the base and Ernie would have an occasion to chat with them while they were on base, he would always point out the great Rush Street spots to go to, hoping that they'd go out and party all night. And then, you know, it was day games every day back then. Then the next day, right, they wouldn't be up for baseball. So not sure if that's an apocryphal story.
Well, I think there were I think there were enough guys on his team who might have been out there,
that's
too.
Right. That's true. And the big story out of camp, Chris Bryant hitting leadoff this year, according to David Ross. And, you know, when I first heard this, I thought, wait a minute, you got your home run slugger leading off. But, you know, back in the day, you put your little speedster up there at the top. But the thinking is different now, isn't it?
Well, a lot of the thinking is different. Did you ever see a pitcher batting eighth?
Right.
When the thinking was you essentially are getting two leadoff men. You know, things have changed the way lineups are put together. But to me, why not give it a shot? Because you've tried 17 leadoff men the last 3 years. And Anthony Rizzo had his moments. And Wilson Contreras had his moments. And, you know, just see if maybe this is Chris Bryant's time, with Rizzo batting behind him, too, which would make it kind of interesting.
I guess you can make the case that, look, your leadoff man is starting the game, but then as the game progresses, he's not necessarily the first man up in every inning.
Right. Well, so that's true. And the point's been made, why wouldn't you want a guy who's good at getting on base and is a good base runner, even though he's a home run hitter, but he can also, look, I mean, guys can lead off, gives a team a big lift when you got a slugger up there leading off the game with a home run.
Bryant says he's fine with it, but if I had in my contract, and I don't know if he's got this in his, if I had money tied to RBIs, I would say, Skipper, I'll get somebody else to lead off.
Yeah. Well, remember, he'll probably get four more at-bats a game.
Yeah, that's right.
So, and now it's up to other guys to be on base
when
he comes up, right?
Downtown Alderman Brendan Riley is here, fresh from yesterday's city council meeting. Alderman, good morning. How you doing?
Good morning, Bob. I'm doing great.
I don't know where to start with you. There's so much to talk about from yesterday. First off, I think people are still concerned about the CTA and security. I imagine you're hearing a lot about that. And by the way, give the district that you're in again, the
sure.
boundary, so people know.
So I represent the Loop, large portions of the Gold Coast, River North, Streeterville, Navy Pier, Grant Park, basically where all the really big, tall buildings are.
Right, and where most people congregate. So we had that fatal shooting in the Loop, and the people are concerned about the CTA. We asked Interim Chicago Police Superintendent Charlie Beck about it yesterday, and there seems to be a plan in the works. What's happening?
It's actually something I've been advocating for quite a long time. Little known fact, I didn't grow up in Chicago. I grew up in cities on the East Coast, and I remember using public transportation in Boston and New York, the one thing that was a constant was the presence of police officers on the actual trains. And for whatever reason, the city of Chicago has gotten away from that practice. And it shows. The crime stats are completely unacceptable. At a time when we're encouraging people to use public transit to reduce congestion, we need to make sure that it's safe for them. So I'm really glad that the mayor and Interim Superintendent Beck are developing a plan. I think that plan starts with putting police officers back on trains. Guarding platforms does no one any good if you're on a train between them. So my hope is that'll be one of the changes they implement in the next couple weeks.
That soon, maybe?
Look, every weekend we're having these incidents. Every weekend that we wait, someone else is going to be harmed. So this is absolutely urgent for the mayor and for the police department, and I expect a plan in place here shortly.
You got to do it before summertime for sure.
Amen.
Let's talk about what you're doing and what you want to do in terms of Uber drivers or Lyft drivers or people impersonating those drivers. What are the police going to do now?
So we just passed a new ordinance yesterday that makes it a criminal offense for impersonating a rideshare driver. And people would ask, well, what's the big deal with that? Just this weekend, we had a violent incident where three women from Wisconsin brought their black SUV downtown to prey on drunk NBA All-Star partygoers, and they got one. Luckily, the police were there to witness this man being held up at gunpoint in the SUV. They pursue the vehicle and throw the victim out of the moving vehicle at some 40 miles an hour. That victim was in intensive care, will be okay. And the cops got the bad guys. This ordinance is important because they could have actually proactively stopped that car that they saw trolling for passengers and checked to see if that was a real rideshare driver. This never would have happened. And so after that incident, the local police commander called me to ask, when will this ordinance pass? That happened yesterday.
And, that's good.
And I think that's going to be a good, useful tool because this is a real problem. There are folks, this is what they do. They prey upon drunk tourists that are walking out of nightclubs downtown.
You know what? I've noticed, I don't know if Lyft does this, maybe they do, but some of these rideshare companies like Uber have like a blue light up on the dash to identify mm-hmm. the car properly. Is that helping?
I think Lyft, we have fewer problems with Lyft. With Uber, though, you can literally photocopy the Uber indicia and tape it on your inside windshield, mm-hmm. and you look just like a Lyft or Uber driver. And, you know, you get a little phone stand in the middle of your dashboard. Boom. You look just like a rideshare driver. So that's an issue.
By the way, I meant to ask you if you knew Sharon Gist-Gilliam at all, who passed away. Did you know her?
No, I didn't.
Maureen O'Donnell has a nice old bit in the Sun-Times today. She served six mayors, and she passed away at the age of 76. She served in City Hall in six mayors, I think.
Wow.
She also taught history at Farragut and Harlan High Schools. We were sad to hear of her passing. Hmm. Back with 42nd Ward Alderman Brendan Riley, who yesterday at the city council meeting introduced what he called a street harassment ordinance that would make it a crime to verbally harass another person walking down the street. And as you know, Alderman, the mayor said this raises red flags. And, she mentioned that you're a thoughtful guy and you're responding to issues that have developed in your ward. But the mayor said, I need to take a look at the language itself. Talk sure. about what you want to do and why people are sort of concerned about this.
Sure. And look, I appreciate the mayor's perspective. And she's the attorney, not me. So I look forward to having a conversation with her about this. And she's right to have concerns about protecting your First Amendment right to free speech. I agree with that. But what we have here is a challenge for police officers, especially in the Loop. There's a population of folks who prey upon tourists and commuters every single day. These aren't the folks who are passively asking for money, sitting on the curb, please help. These are folks that literally stalk you and threaten you, and in some cases, push you.
Mm-hmm.
That was taken off the books a couple of years ago because of constitutional concerns. There'd been a raft of legal opinions throughout the country saying this was unconstitutional. The street harassment ordinance that I introduced yesterday is more broadly written. It isn't specifically focused on the practice of aggressive panhandling. It encapsulates all other sorts of harassing behavior. This is something the police asked me for. I didn't wake up one morning and say, hey, let's try this out. It's a real issue. And the police have no recourse to move people along. They don't even have a threat of a ticket. My hope is we don't have to write a lot of tickets. And certainly the goal here is not to incarcerate people for their speech. But the threat of a ticket oftentimes is enough to end the harassing behavior. The cops just want to have that tool in their toolbox, and I'm trying to give it to them.
As you said, it's a shame that you have to legislate being a decent human being.
It is.
But I guess in some cases you do, and you want to give those folks their space who are needy. But yeah, they shouldn't be attacking us.
That's right.
I think everybody would agree on that.
It's not against the law to be homeless or indigent, right? And I don't want that to be illegal. It's when you go that step too far, you're in someone's personal space, you're threatening them. That's a different kind of behavior that I think we have to legislate for.
Also, there's this issue of always of too much traffic, no parking, and then the mayor sending a message about bus and bicycle lanes and people who park there.
Yes.
So the police are going to crack down on this. Do I understand this?
Thank goodness, yes.
They haven't been before?
It hasn't really been a priority. We've really prioritized dealing with violent crime and property crime. Traffic enforcement has not been a priority for this department for quite some time.
Well, do they have enough personnel to take care of that without taking anybody off of the violent crime watch?
They do. Right now, they're roving and not issuing citations for this kind of behavior. Rather than rove, we're going to have them stop and write tickets from time to time. But again, this mayor really does understand the issues we have related to traffic congestion downtown. And a lot of it has to do with loading zone and bike lane abuse, double parking and traffic to deliver your beer. That has a ripple effect throughout downtown Chicago. So for this mayor to prioritize traffic enforcement and loading zone enforcement, I think that's great. And I think people will see a dramatic difference in traffic flow during rush hours when that happens.
So we're talking about not the police force, but really the parking enforcement aides, aren't we?
Revenue aides and cops both can write these tickets, but the idea here is not to be pulling cops away from their beats. It's to empower revenue aides also to take photos of those vehicles that are trying to flee the scene as they're issuing a ticket. We can now get them with a time-stamped and date-stamped photo of their license plate and write the ticket and send it to them in the mail. My hope is that really, really tough enforcement, aggressive for a couple months, changes behavior downtown. But I'm glad the mayor's prioritized this. It's needed.
And these are people who are parking in a bike lane and a bus stop?
Bike lanes, bus stops, and also you'll see it every day, double parked in traffic. But yeah, this happens all the time. Bike lanes are meant to be infrastructure to protect bicyclists, right? You're not supposed to be parking cars in them. The dedicated bus lanes that run on Washington and on Madison are constantly blocked by other vehicles that are loading. Those will be express lanes. So I do think that routine enforcement will change behavior.
And if the bus lane is blocked and the bus has to go in a traffic lane, then it messes everything up, doesn't it?
Back up four intersections behind you. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. There's a Tribune story today about, well, the headline is 10,000 plus apartments predicted to be constructed for downtown Chicago by 2022. And they go on to talk about modest annual rent increases. And developers are drawing up plans for more than 10,000 new apartments between now and 2022. What, when you hear that, what concern goes off in your mind?
I'm actually excited about it.
Are you?
I may be the only person who lives downtown who's excited about that, but I am. It means that, that downtown's economy is chugging.
More congestion.
More congestion, but you know what? Density is good urban policy. You want density in your central business district. You want people to be able to walk to work. What we're seeing with the new units added is actually we're adding fewer and fewer parking spaces to service those buildings. The trend is people are going carless, and that's a good trend. But more units does not mean bad news for Chicago. That's good news.
Well, property taxes are a concern here, and I guess according to the story here in the Tribune, new property assessments are coming to the city in 2021, which could push up property taxes to an estimated $5,000 to $6,000. And but they point out here the downtown market is boosted by good job growth as companies relocate offices from the suburbs and other cities. Mm-hmm. And then the I guess the condo market is still going along pretty well, too, isn't it?
It is. I'd like to see more new construction and condominium. Right now, everyone's getting financing for the big luxury rental buildings. The good news about the rental buildings, they're being designed to condo-level quality. So someday down the road, they could flip those into condominiums. But it's still very difficult for developers to get the loans they need to construct market-rate condominiums near downtown. It's a difficult market for them.
Yeah, they're forecasting a gradual increase this year in condos. One company announced plans to construct buildings with more than 700 new condominiums. So all of this, again, leads to questions about parking and traffic. And, you know, one of my pet peeves, and I don't know where we are, I haven't asked you about this in a long time, is when the valets for restaurants take up like a meter box space.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have enough of those as it is. What's the law on that?
I actually wrote the law on that.
Did you?
Yeah. The valet companies are supposed to have on file with the city a parking garage or surface lot lease that shows they have so many spaces accounted for there. They also need to supply a map of how they're going to circulate their cars between the lot and their customers. Very few of them are in compliance. We just learned this the last couple months. I've been asking for audits. Where are the leases? The department, the city, isn't able to produce a lot of these. So you're right. They've been getting away with this recently. But they're supposed to park those cars off the street. They're not allowed to hog an entire block of parking spaces to do business. They have to take those away. Problem is, enforcement is intermittent. The Department of Business Affairs have inspector teams that go out. But most of this abuse happens on the weekends and at night. We don't have a lot of inspectors working, and the valet companies know this. Like everything in Chicago, we've got lots of great laws, but without steady enforcement, it doesn't work. But no, I have a personal pet peeve with bad valet companies, and I've been working on this issue since I got elected back in 2007.
Yeah, and weekends and nighttime, that's when we're downtown looking for a parking space. Yeah. Can you deputize me? Because how many times has it happened to you and to everyone where you're waiting to get a space at a meter box, and then somebody's pulling a car out of there from a restaurant, and bless the restaurant people, we love them, and we need them, but and they're putting in another car in that space while you're waiting, and you don't get a chance.
That exact same thing happened to me. I was actually, rare occasion, driving to a condo association meeting to give a presentation, and I found a parking space right in front of the building. As I'm pulling in, another car pulls in ahead of me, and it's a valet. He offered to sell me the space.
Oh, God.
Give me $15. I said, that's a parking meter. Who are you? I said, well, actually, I happen to be the alderman, and I'm going to write an ordinance tomorrow.
Oh, okay.
So that's actually what prompted. I had the exact same thing happen to me, Bob. It's very frustrating, and it requires enforcement. We've got a good law on the books. We just need more enforcement.
I should have asked Charlie Beck yesterday to deputize
there
me.
You go.
Could have helped you.
Yeah.
Alderman Brendan Riley from the 42nd Ward downtown. Always good to catch up with you, sir.
Thanks for having me, Bob.
All right. Have a good day.
You too.
10 minutes after 8. time for Dean Richards Entertainment News. Dean, I really thought Channel 9 would assign you the Rod Blagojevich press conference yesterday, because that certainly was entertaining.
I was the only one that wasn't there.
You know, proof positive, that was a complete circus yesterday in front of the Blagojevich home in Ravenswood Manor. Ronnie Woo Woo was there in full uniform.
I saw him. God bless him. God bless Ronnie Woo. He shows up at everything still.
All right, let's get to the other entertainment. Whitney Houston. This is going to be, well, is it Whitney Houston or just the, well, yeah, it's not Whitney Houston, obviously, but
she's pretty dead.
How are they going to recreate the Whitney Houston experience?
So, you know, they do these hologram shows. Now, they did one with Tupac. They did one with Michael Jackson, a couple of others. I saw the Michael Jackson one. It's creepy. I just think it's so creepy. It's a 3D image of the person. Sometimes it's just the person with obviously recorded music. But with this Whitney Houston hologram show, it's going to be the 3D image of her. It's going to be live backup dancers, a live band doing all of Whitney Houston's songs. For the show that's called An Evening with Whitney, it's going to launch next week in Europe, and they're going to do a bunch of dates there, see how it goes, and if it goes well, then they're going to bring the show here to the U.S. I think it's, to me, I mean, I guess some fans might like it. I think it's disrespectful to the memory of the artist. And just, you know, you're sitting there watching a dead person performing. I would rather watch videos of her concerts or something if I want to see Whitney Houston performing again. Interestingly, her former manager, the executor of her estate, her sister-in-law, this is all one person named Pat Houston, she's the one putting it together and says, I know that Whitney would like this and that we're doing all the things right. You know, that's you know, it reminds me of these people that you know, are still trying to get blood out of the Michael Jackson rock and Elvis rock, and you know, so many of these artists who have passed away, and they're still trying to figure out how they can get money out of it all.
Yeah, that's the bottom line on it. You saw the Michael Jackson show?
I did. It's creepy. It's creepy. It's like a, you know, it's obviously a computer image. You know, with what they're able to do with computers now, and it's 3D dimensional, it kind of looks like Michael Jackson on stage a little bit.
Well, higher praise you're not going to get than that. It kind of looks like Michael Jackson on stage a little bit.
Says Dean Richards.
All right, let's move on to what Wendy Williams said that is getting her in a bit of hot water this morning.
This is this whole story about Drew Carey's ex-fiance named Amy Harwick. They broke up a couple of years ago, but Drew Carey still has, he issued statements since her death over the weekend that still has a lot of affection for her. But yesterday, her ex-boyfriend was charged with murder on this, murder and burglary charges against this guy named Gareth Pursehouse. He is facing a possible death sentence for allegedly pushing her from a third floor balcony. So this guy has now been arrested, charged with murder. But the other part of the story today is that Wendy Williams, the talk show host, is being ripped on social media for joking about the killing on her show. She was talking about her falling from the building and joking, come on down, while, you know, she was gesturing that somebody was falling from a balcony. Incredibly bad taste. Harwick's brother is demanding an apology. No word from Wendy Williams on the whole thing. It's just not funny.
Not at all. We're talking entertainment news with Dean Richards. What is it with these Saturday Night Live people, Dean? They get popular and then they want to leave. I always think too soon. What do you think?
Greedy.
Yeah, that's our theme this morning.
Colin Jost is the latest to say that he may be leaving the show. Now, he says this in a new memoir that he's got out. Should somebody his age be writing a memoir?
A pamphlet, maybe.
Right. How much do you have to say, really? And then I started reading it a little bit, And I did not know that he's been with Saturday Night Live for 15 years. He was a writer first and then became head writer when Seth Meyers left, and for the last 6 years has been on the Weekend Update desk. So he's been there quite a while. Still, I say, you should not be allowed to write a memoir until you've done something for, 25, 30, 50 years, something like that.
Well, what does he want to do, movies?
He is not saying that. He just says that he is mentally prepared to leave the show, but wants to stay on it at least through the 2020 election. He hasn't said what could possibly be coming next. Movies makes the most sense. I don't know if you've noticed the past few shows, we never used to see him in sketches at all, and we've seen him in, he's playing Pete Buttigieg in the political sketches now. So he's like spreading his wings a little bit now. You know, maybe inspired by his girlfriend, Scarlett Johansson, to seek out other venues.
Yeah, I would retire rather than go on to movies
and just have Scarlett support him.
Why not?
That's not a terrible idea.
I think she's got a few bucks in the bank.
Yeah, if you could make that work, go for it.
Are we going to be seeing her on Netflix anytime soon? What's going on?
She's in just about every other movie, so mm-hmm. It wouldn't surprise me. But the news about Netflix is that number one, Black Panther, which has been featured on Netflix for quite some time now, will be leaving on March the 1st. Not that significant that it would be leaving an online platform, but a sign of what is to come, that anything that is owned by Disney will be moving to the new Disney online platform, Disney Plus. Everything Marvel now is owned by Disney, so you can expect Avengers, all the superhero movies, to be leaving Netflix and other online platforms and going to Disney Plus, the same way that Black Panther is going to be doing. But a couple of new titles that will be coming to Netflix. Bob, I don't know about you, but every time I see Goodfellas or Shawshank Redemption on, if it's playing someplace, I always stop and watch it.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, absolutely. And they're playing a lot all the time.
And they play them a lot. You're right.
I would add the movie Zodiac to that.
Oh, yeah.
That gets me all the
Zodiac
time.
Zodiac is a good one. I don't see it enough, but the movie Moonstruck, I could watch that every single day for the rest of my life. I love that movie. But Goodfellas and Shawshank Redemption coming to Netflix on March the 1st. There's also a new TV series that is called Self-Made, inspired by the life of Madam C.J. Walker, who was the hair care pioneer for African-American women, mostly when she started her company at the start of the 20th century. She was one of the first African-American millionaires in the country. Tiffany Haddish, Octavia Spencer, Blair Underwood, among the stars of that. There's also a new original feature called Spencer Confidential, that stars Mark Wahlberg, that'll be premiering on Netflix on March the 1st. I'm going to be talking to him next week, so we'll get a little bit of scoop on that and see if we can get any dirt on any of the Wahlberger restaurants.
That's right.
That's the bigger question that I have for him now.
Yeah, I don't know if I've kept up properly now. Do they have a house here in the area?
Yeah, he and, not Mark Wahlberg, but his brother Donnie, Wahlberg and Jenny McCarthy, they have a house in is it Geneva or St. Charles now?
Out St. Charles, suburbs. I believe.
Yeah, that's their home base. They both work on both of the coasts. Donnie is still with New Kids on the Block and is out on the road a lot. But when when they are home, they are home in St. Charles, and I've talked to both of them. They love it. They love the St. Charles area.
Donnie and Jenny.
Donnie
nice.
And Jenny, yeah.
Okay, so Ben Affleck was talking about something that he regrets. So where did he talk about this? What was he talking about?
This was a surprisingly revealing article that was in the New York Times. You know, usually these stars like to keep their private life private, especially him, because his private life has been such a train wreck. But he really opened up with the New York Times and said that his divorce with Jennifer Garner is the biggest mistake that he's ever made in his life, the biggest regret of his entire life. He attributes it to problems with alcohol and drug abuse. Talks about being in rehab three different times. The latest was just a couple of years ago. So, you know, hopefully he's on the right path and kind of getting things together. Ironically, he's got a new movie that's opening that's called The Way Back, in which he plays a high school basketball coach who had a drinking problem that torpedoes his marriage. You know, and here is this high school basketball coach trying to get his life back on track again. You know, it could be called the Ben Affleck story.
It
really sounds like his personal life. So I'm gonna actually be headed to New York today, and I'm going to be talking with Ben tomorrow morning. You know, whether we open this can of worms up and, you know, talk about something. He's already kind of talked about it in the New York Times. But I am curious, you know, for people, you know, especially him, he's been so protective of his private life. Why he would open up like this. I mean, maybe it's part of his healing process to, you know, admit what he's done and try to make amends, say sorry to people that he's sorry that he hurt along the way. You know, it could be something like that. But we'll see, you know, where the interview goes. You know, I certainly have had my share of interviews where of stuff that I shouldn't have brought up.
Well, you would think he'd be expecting it if he talked to the New York Times.
Right.
And perhaps it is therapeutic for him.
Right. You're going to talk to the New York Times. You can talk to that weasel from Chicago.
The Victory Auto Records guy.
The Victory Auto Records guy. It's very disarming once I tell them that I'm the Victory Auto Records guy.
We have more than one text wondering if you've heard anything about Elton John's health. He canceled. Did he cancel for the rest of the year?
No, not the rest of the year. The latest that I heard, he over the weekend he performed, tried to perform in New Zealand. He got about halfway through the show and just literally could not go on. What we learned after he stopped the show and had to be helped off the stage and taken out, that he earlier in the day had been diagnosed with walking pneumonia. Probably shouldn't have gone on in the first place, but he did. And then he had shows scheduled in Australia this past Wednesday and today. And now both of those shows have been canceled as well. And he still has a handful of shows to complete on that part of his tour, but they have not canceled those shows yet. So it's not completely over, but he's still in recuperation mode.
So I know that they're rescheduling all those shows. So this farewell tour is going to go on for quite a while, isn't it?
Yeah. After, I mean, when he gets done there, he's got a show in Indianapolis to make up that he canceled because he wasn't feeling well. So he's definitely got that. I don't remember the rest of his schedule, but he needs to slow down a little. He does need to slow down a little bit in this farewell tour. He's trying to pack in as, you know, many shows as he can before, you know, he said that the reason that he wants to retire is that he wants to spend quality time with his kids, with his family. You can't fault somebody for trying to achieve some quality of life, but, you know, if he's going to kill himself trying to achieve that, that's it's a little bit counterproductive. So
I saw him a while back on this tour when he played in Rosemont, and looking at him, well, let's put it this way, I don't think he goes on that Mick Jagger exercise regimen before performing. You know what I mean?
Right. Very politely put, by the way. Wow, are you a speechwriter for one of those candidates last night? That was very eloquently put. No, I said when he was at the Oscars a couple of weeks ago, he didn't look right. It something did not look right to me. But it sure seems like, you know, you're walking around with double pneumonia and you're traveling all over the country, all over the world.
Yeah.
You got to do something to take care of yourself.
Yeah, he makes me want to do sit-ups. So there you go for the entertainment report. It's Dean Richards, and I'm Don Rickles, or am I Jackie Leonard this morning? I'm not sure. Anyway, thanks, Dean, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.
All right.
Johnny Jett travels to more than 20 countries a year, and his website is johnnyjett.com, and here he is. Good morning, Johnny. Where in the world are you today?
Good morning. I am just arrived to South Florida, where it's nice and warm.
Don't remind us. Yeah, it's cold here. let's talk about this lawsuit, which is not going to go anywhere, but the story about the passenger who says she's hurt because her reclined seat was repeatedly punched, and she's got problems with the flight attendant now. But this is a problem because they're cramming us into those coach seats more and more, aren't they, Johnny?
Without a doubt, but I am on her side because that video was ridiculous of the guy punching her her seat. But without, I mean, the airlines are just cramping the seats, and you know, if you get stuck in a regular coach and the person reclines on you, you cannot work on your laptop or whatever he was doing. But he should have known better to get a seat that reclined. His big beef was that his seat did not recline. Before I fly, I literally spend sometimes hours on each flight to make sure I have the best seat possible. And there are ways to do that for free and also to pay for it. But one way to do it for free, by the way, is there's a website, Expert Flyer, where you can set a seat alert. They'll let you set one seat free, but usually to get the good stuff, like to have like any available aisle seat or whatever you're looking for, is $9.99 a month. Or $100 a year. And but, you know, I set all kinds of seat alerts. I even set the seat alert, by the way, for the seat that I have currently booked, even if it's the best seat on the plane, because I want to know if the airline changes my flight.
Mm.
So sometimes they change equipment because, you know, their equipment breaks down or whatever. And that way I know that my seat's been moved and I should act fast to get another seat. Otherwise, if you wait till the last minute, you just roll up to the airport or check in online right before, you know, you could be stuck in a middle seat and no one wants that. And especially I don't want that. So it does take time. But I do think that, you know, before you recline your seat, I always give the person behind me the heads up. I say, listen, I'm going to recline. And I usually don't recline unless the person in front of me reclines. But
no, that's proper. That's proper etiquette. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, if the person in front of you reclines, you have to recline.
Yeah.
Basically.
Run that by us again. What was that site, and how does it work? Expert Flyer, did you say?
Yeah, expertflyer.com, expertflyer.com. So it's a membership, and it's not the easiest site to use. It's really for at frequent flyers, but actually I had one of our writers do a tutorial on it, so we have, you know, step by step, and I can tweet it out at Johnny Jet. I can also send it to you so you can put in the show notes on how to use it, because just signing up to it is not the easiest thing, but it is really handy. It's also great for you know, if you want a mileage award ticket. A lot of times when you try and use your miles and points, there's not a seat available, but you can set an alert on this website as well. So they'll let you know when a mileage ticket opens up as well.
There was a story this week about the snacks on United, the complimentary items. Now they're going to have Oreo Thins, which might be a little bit better than eating a regular Oreo, but it's still not exactly health food. Shouldn't more of the airlines be doing a better job on giving us a healthy snack and something maybe a little more exciting than a bag of pretzels?
Yes. Well, you know what? I was like excited about the Oreo Thins because my son loves the Oreos, and I'm not a big fan of the Biscoff, and I kind of relate Biscoff with Delta because I think they started using them. But yeah, I mean, without a doubt, it'd be nice to see airlines handing out much healthier fruits or snacks. I mean, fruit would be a good idea, unless you're flying internationally and getting trouble with customs, which, by the way, brings up another tip. And if you're on an international airline, let's say you're flying Delta from New York or from Paris to New York or Chicago, and they give you an apple on board and you try to bring that through customs, you're going to get fined.
Right.
So so always keep that in mind. But yeah, it'd be nice to see the airlines handing out snacks, healthy ones.
Right.
But I guess beggars can't be choosers, because these days it's tough to even get food on a plane.
Uh-huh. And with the coronavirus and all the news stories about the cruise ships and quarantines, are there deals out there? The business has to be down for the cruise lines now, doesn't it?
Yeah. You know what? Actually, I posted that question yesterday on my Facebook and Twitter because I was curious. And, you know, most of the experts who are in the cruise industry say that the deals are coming. They really haven't set them out yet, but they are going to be coming big time, because I know a lot of people who have cruises all set and they don't even want to go, which I think is a mistake. I think cruise companies will now do a much better job at sanitizing, and if there is a virus
outbreak to learn from the mistakes of the Diamond Princess. But, yeah, the deals will be coming, so hold tight.
Johnny Jett travel tips this morning from JohnnyJett.com. And, Johnny, talk about the best time to buy airline tickets. There was a big study and analysis of this, and what did that uncover?
Yeah, well, there's actually every company has a different study. Expedia, AirHelp. This one, we featured one yesterday in my free weekly newsletter, by the way, from Qtrip. I think it's more of an Asian air flight search engine. But anyway, these guys tell you, you know, if you want to book the best seats, always book far in advance. So, you know, usually airlines open up their tickets 330 days in advance. And actually, I've just been booking tickets right now for Christmas and New Year's. And so I think right now they're like January 7th or around there. Because every day I'm looking to see if flights drop. And while you do that, by the way, always set a fare alert. So buy in advance so you can get your seat that you want, because we talked about that last segment, especially if you're traveling with a group or a family and you really want your seats together. So you set the fare alert, but there's different websites that will do it. Google Flights does a pretty good job, although I've been monitoring one flight that I just booked today, but I found it was actually Google Flights was not that accurate. But Kayak also offers it, a website called YAPTA.com. And with like YAPTA, you can put in the destinations you want to go, date, and the price you want to pay. And if it drops below it, they'll email you. Or Google Flights will just monitor that certain flight. You don't put in the price you want to pay, and it'll let you know if it's going up or down, and or if it's a good time to buy. Mm-hmm. So that's the best way to do it, I mean, in terms of finding cheap deals.
You know what?
And being flexible, of course.
Yeah. I hate talking to guys like you who have their Christmas vacation airline tickets already. I'm still figuring out spring break. But you know what? I've found in recent years, though, that occasionally it's hard, but if you stay, I guess the trick is to keep searching all the time online. But sometimes some good prices, you know, are appearing very, very late in the game, aren't they?
For sure, mm-hmm. Without a doubt. So it's actually sometimes a mistake to buy really far in advance, because the airlines really have no incentive to give you a deal. So they you know, see what the market's doing. If you know, if the seats are sold on the flight, prices are going to go up. But if they're not, they're going to offer a discount. Mm-hmm. And that's why you got to be flexible, because, you know, if you can leave on a Tuesday or a Wednesday, usually you'll find much cheaper fares. I mean, sometimes 50% or greater. So always use your vacation days wisely.
Before we let you go, Johnny, I want to talk to you about this Real ID business, a group representing America's airports now pushing for the federal government to delay that October 1st deadline for us to get Real ID. The fear is that the implementation of all of this could cause huge issues and headaches at airports. What do you think is going to happen here?
Without a doubt. I mean, I think they're going to have to delay it, but I'm not sure they will. Because people are not prepared. I mean, they will not let you get on a domestic flight if you don't have a Real ID. And you can tell if your driver's license has one, because usually it's either a star or there's a bear with a star in a circle. I don't think Illinois is one of the states that actually is compliant. So yeah,
we need to get it by October 1st.
But what you can do is travel with a passport. So if you have a passport, you don't need to worry about it, but you just don't want to lose it. So another alternative, by the way, I would say get a passport card. So when you order a passport, like we just ordered one this week for my daughter, and we just paid $15 extra for a passport card. And I like to have that as a backup just in case her passport ever got lost. We'd keep her passport card in a separate place. That way we could still drive across the border or take a cruise, you know, like to the Bahamas using a passport card and passport itself. And also, you could also use Nexus or Global Entry if you have that ID.
Yeah, I was just thinking, do I have that? We go through the speedier line with TSA. Does that mean I have a Global Entry card?
That's TSA PreCheck.
Oh, that's what
TSA
I have, PreCheck. Yeah, that's what I have.
The PreCheck should do it. I'm not positive, but Global Entry, which includes TSA PreCheck, will definitely do it. And that's just a little card. So, you know, there are alternatives, but
you know, otherwise make an appointment at the DMV and bring all the paperwork. Because I went down to get my thing where I live in California, and I forgot one piece of paper, I think like my tax returns or something, and I got denied.
Yeah, you need something that proves your address, don't you? That's what hangs
up.
You need a couple forms,
and there was one of my tax forms I did not have. So.
A lot of information here this morning, and I know people want us to repeat a lot of this, and maybe they didn't get some of the sites we were talking about. Is all this posted up on your website, Johnny?
It is, but it's not easy to find, so I'll put it on Twitter. I'll put it in my newsletter. I send out a newsletter tomorrow, and I'll put it in there as well so people can sign up for free to there.
Go ahead, and you can do that at johnnyjett.com, J-O-H-N-N-Y.
You got it.
And it's always good talking to you.
J-O-H-N-N-Y-J-E-T. One T. I'm not related to Joan.
Right. Glad you pointed that out. Where's the next trip for you?
You know, it's a secret. I always try and tease people to go, so they follow me on Instagram. So I always tell people, you know, guess where I am. Actually, I haven't told people where I am right now. You're the first people to tell them.
Aren't you sneaky? You're in warm Florida. Good for you. Well, if you want to come to the Midwest, don't come back here until, let's see, don't come till after Memorial Day. Saturday and Sunday up near 50 here. So there you go. It's pretty good for us.
Not bad.
All right. Always good to talk to you. It's Johnny Jett, johnnyjett.com. Happy travels. Safe travels, Johnny.
Thank you. Take care.
It's 8:53 right now. And in a couple of minutes, we'll check in with John Williams, see what he's got going on today. Are we done with Rod Blagojevich for a while? I think the Michael Bloomberg beating last night has taken the place on talk shows of Rod Blagojevich for this morning. There's nothing more to say, I guess, about Rod Blagojevich now except people speculating on what he's going to do next, where he's going to go. I don't know if I ever really got on my soapbox about this yesterday, but I was one of the people who thought 14 years was too long, but I just wish he'd be more contrite. And you kind of thought that yesterday you'd hear a little bit more of the beaten down, 7-plus years in prison, Rod Blagojevich, but you got the same old Blago, didn't you?
Yeah, yesterday in our newscast, Bob, we mentioned Blagojevich probably 155,000 times. And today he's only been mentioned twice in our newscast. So.
And other than some interviews he's going to be doing now, do we have any other late-breaking Blago information?
No, I think the story this morning is, as you said, people are wondering what he's going to do next. His job opportunities, the ideas that he has for a career path, those kinds of things. We'll see if people are betting on those today.
Did he go running this morning?
He used to do that every day.
Yeah.
He did it in
prison. I figured everybody would be camping out there waiting to see him go running.
Yeah, and then before prison, he used to run in the Ravenswood neighborhood there all the time. I don't know. He stayed in shape. We know that.
Yeah. Maybe he's a little nippy.
Yeah. Okay. We'll be. My bet is that it'll be Blago on the air somewhere. That's what I think. On the radio, I bet.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking, too. Or maybe even as a contributor, let's say, on Fox News. Yeah,
yes, you know. Exactly.
It'll be called Blago Blabs.
The word around yesterday was that his handler is lining up Target interviews. And by Target, I guess they meant they wanted to reach certain audiences. So I'm certain that Fox News Channel is part of that. He did do an interview with the local station, with Fox 32, I know, last night. So we'll see what happens. Let's see. Just looking at the scorecards from the Democratic debate last night. Bloomberg down. Was it a TKO in the first round? I think so. We'll check on that later on this morning. And also, I'd like to alert Mayor Pete that he needs a new makeup artist, because we were noticing a bit too much in the mustache department last night. There's your analysis of last night's debate. John, I don't know how you can top that, but you're welcome to try.
Well, if you ask me, the person that needs a cosmetic makeover is Blago. He needs to get a better Band-Aid.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He cut himself shaving, didn't he?
And then he couldn't stop dabbing it. And anybody who's ever shaved knows if you get a little cut, you got to put some pressure on there with the tissue for a while. But I'm sure Patty and the girls have Band-Aids in the house. A Band-Aid would have kept the blood from coming.
At one point, you hear Patty say, or motion to him to, you know, keep dabbing.
Yeah,
because
right.
He wasn't used to using a razor. That was it, right?
He said that the razors aren't as good in jail as they are on the outside. He's forgotten what it's like to use a Bic triple head, I guess. So he's out.
So are we? Have we overdosed on Blago now? Are we done?
Oh, we've overdosed on Blago a long time ago. But no, we're going to do it ad nauseum. We're going to do it 1,000 times. We do have a new sponsor, though, Blago Band-Aids. You'll be hearing their advertisements throughout the show.
Yeah, we talked yesterday about the shampoo, the Blago shampoo that's out there.
Man's got to make a living, you know?
Mm-hmm.
In fact, there's an interesting piece, and I'll just go over some of the details. If you saw it, maybe you didn't, but what are his options now that he's out? We'll talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, we think broadcasting.
I hope not. Also, there was one other thing I was going to mention, and that is that so many people called into my show yesterday, and they were really concerned about opening packages that are coming to them from China. I mean, literally, some people won't touch them. They'll throw away the thing they ordered. Hmm. Amazon put it on the front step, and they're not going to open it up.
I've heard that is a growing problem.
Yeah.
All right.
We'll visit on that a little bit.
Okay, it's the John Williams Show. That's coming up after the news. Thank you so much for listening. And let's hear a little of Pat Metheny as we take the last train home. We'll see you tomorrow. Have a good day.